Halloween, the article of Igor Popperesky, results of this in Russia. Since the very beginning of Philippine studies in Russia, the figure of Dr. Jose Rizal was at the center of attention of Russian Filipinologists. This is only natural because Russian intellectual tradition always pays great attention to literature. The Russians often identify themselves as the nation of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. And so the author of Nolimit Anger and Elkirikusterismo and of beautiful verses, the Ultimo Adios especially, was the personification of the best qualities of all Filipinos. Not only this, his mighty intellect, his other writings like the Philippines a Century Hence, the gratitudes, expressed the aspirations of the young Filipino nation, and somehow evoked a warm response in the hearts of many Russians. The admirers of Rizal meet in the Philippines regularly, and for this we thank first of all the Filipino Rizalists and the authorities as well. Russian Filipinologists and Rizalists gathered many times in Russia. In 1961, we marked the centenary of Rizal, and in 1996, the centenary of his death. The name of Jose Rizal is well known in Russia as the name of the first Filipino who stated openly that it was not only possible but quite inevitable to fight against colonial domination. And indeed, he influenced, not always willingly, the 1896 revolution and the formation of an independent republic. It was short-lived, but it began the national liberation movement in Asia. Of course, Rizal's approach to popular uprising may be considered ambivalent and sometimes contradictory, but his ideas inspired the revolutionaries, the rank and file Katipuneros, as well as the Katipunan's leaders. Let us recall the novel Elkirikusterismo, which was the desk companion of Andres Bonifacio, who started the uprising in a manner not unlike that suggested by Sipuan, the main character of the novel. It often happens in history that ideas of one man, having been taken by the masses, become the material force. Rizal's historic merit is that he was the first to realize and then express in his writings the inevitability of revolutionary outbursts. Rizal was born in his epoch and had its birthmarks, but he made a great impact on all the consequent intellectual and literary life of the Philippines and on the structure of the Filipino state. Today, all the forces in the Philippines and all men of significance have to express their attitude towards Rizal. Nobody can afford to ignore him. And certainly, he was not ignored in Russia also. The first wave of interest in Rizal rose in my country in the 1930s. Thus, in 1937, his novel Elkirikusterismo was published in Russian together with an appraisal of his life and works. In the same year, two Russian scholars, Alexander Buber and Olga Rykovskaya, wrote a book about Rizal, which appeared in the popular series called Life of Outstanding People. This series was established by Russian writer Maxim Gorky in 1933 and was and is very prestigious in Russia. We have book lovers who collect only this series, which comprises about 800 titles already. And we are proud to say that the 15th book in this series was about Jose Rizal. Despite scarce sources, the authors managed to penetrate deeply into the inner world of the remarkable Filipino. And some of their conclusions are important for Russian and world Rizalists even now. The Second World War interrupted the Rizal studies in Russia. But it was during these years that Alexander Buber, who is the founder of Rizal studies in Russia, wrote an essential monograph, which is called The Philippine Republic of 1898 and American Imperialism, which appeared in 1948. In it, he gave all-round analysis of Rizal's role in the national liberation struggle and of his contribution to the cultural advancement of his people. The second wave of interest in Rizal was connected with the celebration of his centenary. This time, academician Alexander Bell was surrounded by his followers. Dr. Georgi Levinson, Dr. Yulia Lektonova, and Dr. Olga Barishnikova, and others. Unfortunately, Russian scholars did not participate in the Rizal Congress in 1961, but Russians marked his centenary in a proper way. The Russian publishers put out a collection of Rizal's writings entitled Selected Works, which included autobiographical notes, articles, essays, and some letters. Also published were his novels Volyne Tarnove and Эльфири Русперисмо. The work of academician Huber was continued by Dr. Levinson, who after his teacher's death headed the Russian School of Philippine Studies. His works contain a profound analysis of Rizal's ideological heritage. Several books were put out in the 1970s, among them two books by Dr. Lektonova should be mentioned, Apollonio Babini and the History of Social Thought in the Philippines. They introduced the reader to Rizal's literary career. In the same period, Rizal's poetry was extensively translated into Russian. Particularly popular in Russia is Rizal's immortal poem, Il Ultimo Adios. At present, we have three published translations of it by Dolmatovsky, by Sedov, and by Grushko. A considerable part of Rizal's poetry was translated by Pavel Grushko, a well-known Russian pianist and poet, who, aside from the Ultimo Adios, also translated Antonio Legero, Loris de Heidelberg, Mephidon Versos, and others. Gennady Yaroslavtsev translated Rizal's poems, and those poems were published in periodicals and in poetry collections, such as the Contemporary Filipino Poetry in 1974 and the Bamboo Flute, 1977. In 1978 and in 1979, two novels of Rizal were again published in Russia, and in 1986, republished in two volumes with the introduction by the author of this article, Igor Popeyevsky. All in all, the number of copies of Rizal works in the hands of Russian readers exceeds 500,000, making him the most popular Filipino author in Russia. After him come Francisco Tierney Casse, Nick Joaquin, Amador Hernandez, and Nestor Vicente Madeli Gonzalez. And here some words must be said about Russian school of translation. In Russia, translators were called the postal forces of enlightenment. In the times of USSR, when we were somewhat isolated from the world culture, literary translations played a very important role. Best writers and poets like Boris Pasternak and Anna Akhmatova considered translation of foreign writers and poets as their military service to the Russian people. And Russian translators were of the best quality. Many jokes are said about translations. One of them claims that translations are like women. If they're faithful, then are beautiful, and if they're beautiful, then are faithful. Sometimes it is really so, but not with Russian translations. Our translators were talented people, and they provided ideal balance between faithfulness and beauty, and not only this. They did their best to produce the same aesthetic effect on the reader as that in the language of the original, and were successful in it, despite Robert Frost's assertion that poetry is untranslatable. The author of the article, Igor Kondrevsky, is a professional translator, and he is an official member of the Moscow Union of Writers, He translated the works of Francisco Xavier José and Nick Joaquin into Russian, and consulted many times in the process. He likes to recall one conversation with Nick Joaquin, whom he considers to be a writer of Nobel caliber. He was very proud, Nick Joaquin was very proud, and said something like, "They read me in the country of Dostoevsky." And then Mr. Podberezky replied that, "Nick, but they read my text, not yours." He stopped short because he understood all the implications of what Mr. Podberezky said. The great services of the translator is actually beautiful. But back to our hero. In 1982, Russian readers were introduced to a monograph, The Evolution of Results Creative Writing, authored by Mr. Podberezky. It is only natural that Russian recidivists are especially interested in evidence of results knowledge of the Russian people and Russia. In other words, results-Russian connections. There are many references to Russia and the Russians in result writings. In his diary, dated October-November 1891, when he sailed to Hong Kong from Marseille, we come across the name of Mikhail Berezovsky, with whom Resaitis talks about the policy of colonial powers and socialism, Russian literature, and Leo Tolstoy. It is not impossible that these talks somehow influenced Resaitis' decision to establish a Filipino colony in Northern Borneo, because precisely in that time, Tolstoy's colonies were prosperous in Russia. These colonies were not only economic but spiritual communities as well. Fortunately, St. Petersburg branch of the Institute of Oriental Studies has archives of our outstanding Orientalists, and there are some materials of Berezovsky there. He was born in 1848, died in 1912, had progressive views and was persecuted by the Tsarist government for socialist propaganda. In one of his papers, he mentions Rusal. It might have been written by them, by Rusal himself, so Russia can proudly say that we have the Rusal's autograph. Along with fundamental monographs, extensive information on Rusal is featured in numerous Russian reference books and encyclopedias. One can often come across his names in periodicals. In 1982, the collection entitled The Traditional and the New in the Literature of Southeast Asia was published. It included the article of José Rizal and his impact on the development of Filipino literature in the first third of the 20th century, written by Vladimir Makarenka. In 1985, new biography of José Rizal, written by the author of this article, not me, was published in 150,000 copies in the mentioned above serious life of outstanding people. Then poets of Russia suggested that Mi Ultimo Adios be translated into all written languages of the former Soviet Union, which meant translation into 79 languages. But then Perestroika came and many plans were abandoned. But in 2001, Viktor Sulsky, one of the leading Filipinologists in Russia, published in the Philippine Studies his article, The Prophet of Two Revolutions. The figure of Rizal still is and always will be in the center of Russian Philippine Studies. His heritage is an inexhaustible source of inspiration. Even comparison of his two novels can give ground for interesting hypotheses and for conclusions that are not mere trivia. Generally speaking, one can compare two things on any criteria. But when we compare two books, the first to be compared is the length. Can this comparison give any interesting data in case of Rizal's two novels? I think so. On May 13, 1891, Rizal wrote to José Barça that his second book was not as cheerful as the first one, but that it was more profound and perfect. 2 weeks later, on June 13 of the same year, Rizal again wrote to Barça saying, There are only 3 chapters left to be revised. It is longer than the Novi, the first one. In half a month, the manuscript was with the publishers. The second novel, Phoebe, despite Rizal's pronouncements, is older than the Novi by a quarter. Nevertheless, Rizal definitely said that the second novel had already been finished, and it was longer than the first. What can be said about this discrepancy? It would be justifiable to assume that 2 weeks before the manuscript of the second novel was sent to the publishing house, Rizal had another version of Elifilippus Verissimo, much bigger than the one we know today. Evidently, he reduced it drastically at the last moment. This reduction, if it really took place, can be explained by financial circumstances, by the lack of money. That happened before, when Rizal published his first novel, Novi Vitangere. At that time, Maximo Viola came to his aid, with Fili, Valentin Ventura helped. It is possible that the sum offered was not enough, and Rizal reduced the manuscript. We can find the traces of this hasty reduction in the second novel. The action of the first novel, Noli, takes 2 months, from the end of October to December. And this short period of time is densely filled with events. The action of the second novel, Phoebe, takes longer, from December, Christmas Eve, to May. Rizal narrates about Simon's 2 attempts to start an uprising, but the period between these attempts is not filled with any event. One feels there is a lacuna here, which is not typical of Rizal's writing manner. Many analysts feel that there are evident gaps in the structure of the second novel. Venceslao Redana said that in Elifilippus Verissimo we have only a skeleton of a novel. It is not impossible that this is due to the fact that too much flesh was removed. Then we can speak about the existence of the complete version of Phoebe. If this is so, it is still difficult to say whether we'll ever find a complete version. But there is a law formulated by a well-known Russian writer, Mikhail Bulgakov. Manuscripts do not burn. He meant the indestructibility of literary art. Time will show if this law is applicable to Rizal's writings. Let's compare now the time of action in both novels. In Rizal's studies, it is taken for granted that the first novel, Novi Vitangere, is a diagnosis, while the second, Elifilippus Verissimo, is a prognosis. We quite agree with these definitions. Novi indeed is a diagnosis which reads social cancer. Phoebe is a prognosis which reads violent fight if. But prognosis is always a prophecy, at least in part, and we also evaluate a prophecy by its fulfillment. And if fulfilled, to what extent? Maybe an attempt to find out in what year Rizal expected the violent fight might be of interest. Let us try to find out in what year the events of the first novel took place. Of course, the time of the novel doesn't necessarily coincide with the real time. The fantasy of the novelist is not tied to the calendar. Nevertheless, fiction time is never quite separated from real time. Either allusions or direct references are inevitable. In Noli, we have at least 4 references to real events. The opening of the Suez Canal in 1869, the storm of lightning in Vigan Church in 1870, the execution of Father Gomez Burgos in Zamora in 1872, and finally, and most important, the catastrophe with the steamer Lipa, which Rizal mentions in the epilogue, saying that his heroes are still alive if they have not perished in that tragic event. The catastrophe happened on January 2, 1883. This date can be taken as Erno Sancte Quem, as a date before which the events described in Novi Vitangere took place. It is most probable Rizal placed the action of the first novel in 1882, the year he left the Philippines for the first time. If we agree on this date, and for this we have enough evidence, then we can try to define the time of action in the second novel. In theory, Rizal persistently repeats that the action of the second novel evolves 13 years after the events described in the first novel. It can be ascertained that Dressel expected the fulfillment of his prophecy prognosis in 1895. The second novel was published in 1891. That means Dressel was sure the uprising would take place 4 years after the second novel was written. The cry of Valentawak, or Kubel Lawin if you prefer, which started the revolution, took place in 1896. A small mistake of only 1 year, not bad either for prophecy or prognosis. The comparison of Dressel's novels shows the dynamism of his creativity and political thought. All his life, he moved forward. He saw with greater clarity as time went by the goal of the Filipino people, and gradually, with more precision and accuracy, he formulated its main idea, liberation from colonial rule. The second novel is not a simple continuation of the first one. In Fili, we see quite a new approach towards the problem of liberation. In the first novel, Dressel, the spiritual son of enlightenment, states that the forces of obscurantism fight with the forces of reason. These last forces, he thinks, consist not only of educated Filipinos, they include benevolent colonizers as well. Among them, the Governor General, who approves Ibarra's activity. In the second novel, the demarcation is quite different. Here, he divides the Filipinos and colonizers. Colonial administration is an instrument of exploitation and oppression. This is not a step backwards from universal to national Filipino. This is a step forward from abstract liberal thinking to detailism of life. This is a profound analysis of these people's life. As Dostoevsky once said, the road to the universal passes through national, and there is no other road. Now, a few words about the heroes of both novels. Usually, the racialists, and among them such authority as Miguel de Unamuno, unite Ibarra and Elias into one hero. Quite understandably, they claim that both men express the ideas of Dressel himself. That's true, but then philosopher Tasio can be added here. He takes upon himself somewhat abstract reasoning about religion, essence of knowledge, and progress, and almost literally repeats the thoughts of Dressel given in his earlier articles and essays. Elias and Ibarra argue about political future of the Philippines, of her relations with Spain, and in their arguments we see the introductions Dressel himself wanted to solve. That it is possible and even preferable to be in close union with Spain, and that all that was needed were some reforms. And at the same time, he stated that colonizers were unable to take even moderate steps toward betterment of the Philippines, and predicted revolutionary violence and fight. The lawfulness of these he accepted with many reservations, but he always deeply respected Spanish culture and separated it from colonial oppression. In the second novel, the bearers of polarized tendencies within the Filipino camp are Simon and Padre Florentino, who appears only in the beginning and in the end of narration. Simon is a conspirator. No doubt he is ready to give his life for the liberation of his people, but at the same time, he is convinced that these very people are still unable to understand their own good and must only sacrifice without clear understanding what the sacrifice is for. That's why it is quite permissible and even desirable to increase their sufferings in order to make them lose their patience. Father Florentino, on the other hand, delivers passionate panegyrics to peaceful means of fighting for freedom. Dressel was quite right that he characterized his second novel as more profound and perfect compared to the first. The characters are more individualized and are psychologically more authentic. A character is not just a complement to another, as what happened in the first novel, like Elias complementing Ibarra. But it cannot be denied that some of them are, to a certain extent, marginal personalities. They actually were, and evidently still, are about Filipinos. The Filipinos by birth, and Westerners by education and value orientation. As a consequence, They suffer from inattentions, discomfort and sometimes frustration. But will the Ibarras be always a part of Filipino spiritual life? Evidently not. Times will come and they will be an anachronism. But that doesn't mean that the reader will lose interest in Rizal's novel Heroes. In the Russian philology, we have a very useful term, eternal hero, which means a hero who remains contemporary to all epochs, a character who weaves between thought and feelings of every succeeding generation. There are such eternal heroes in Rizal's novels. In Noli, it is Sisa, the suffering mother, who reminds us of a biblical, I'm not sure how to pronounce, Raquel, or Rachel, who is crying for her children, they are gone, and she refuses to be comforted. The days and centuries go past, but this time the image of suffering mother will always find an echo in the soul of every Filipino, and not only Filipino for that matter. In the second novel, the eternal hero is Cabeza Alas. He also suffers, but his sufferings lead him to rebellion. An honest land dealer, patient who bears all sufferings, but only to a certain point. As soon as the invisible line is crossed, as soon as his amor proprio, which you shall analyze deeply in one of his best essays, Filipinas dentro de 100 años, is wounded, he resorts to arms and starts to fight for his dignity against the oppressors. This image is also eternal in the sense that it will always find an emotional response in the heart of a Filipino and other peoples as well. It is not accidental that one of the Amado Hernandez's heroes takes to his bolo after reading a chapter on Cabeza Alas. It is not accidental that Hernandez's Mga Ibong Mandaragat, translated into Russian by Sergei Ignashev and Vladimir Makarenko, starts precisely where Fili ends, with finding of Padre Florentino's treasure. The creation of these heroes, Sisa and Thales, is the greatest achievement of Rizal as an artist and as a fighter for national liberation of his people. It guarantees the long life of his writings in the memory of his people. Aside from these two novels, Rizal left many brilliant articles and essays and wonderful poetry, the culmination of which is his immortal Mi Ultimo Adios. There is a necessity to be careful towards the study of Rizal and his heritage. Many people appeal to Rizal, and some of them sometimes express deep dissatisfaction in finding him not radical enough and not corresponding to the views of such critics. In defense against such criticism, it should be remembered that firstly, Rizal has the undeniable right to be unlike others and to have his own views. Second, when we try to estimate his heritage, his contribution to the Filipino and world culture, we hardly have the right to criticize him for not mentioning the things which are top of the city today. The historical merits of this or that figure must be assessed on his basis of what was given by him in comparison not with today's knowledge, but in comparison with his predecessors. Nobody can deny that Rizal was the first in the history of Filipino social and political thought who put forward the idea of separation and liberation from colonial yoke. And lastly, one more remark. The famous Nicaraguan poet Rubén Dario, speaking about the immortal hero Cervantes, said once that every word we pronounce about him only increases the sufferings of Nuestro Señor Don Quixote. Allow me to express the sincere hope of the author that what he has written has not increased the suffering of Nuestro Señor Dr. Protagio Rizal Mercado y Alonso Realonda. Thank you very much.